Man, be glad. Be glad that Nick Caserio got hired by Cal McNair 5 years ago. Be glad that you don't have a team where the owner is either meddling or running things like a GM with the GM title. There's two teams in the NFL where the owners are essentially the general managers of the football team, and they are a combined age of 242, these two guys. At least it feels that way.
I love that you did that math.
Jerry Jones, yes, they're each 121 years old. Jerry Jones, Cowboys, we know that, and then Mike Brown of the Cincinnati Bengals, right on cue. Right on cue for this segment, because we're going to hear audio from both of them. Right on cue, Adam Schefter tweets this, 4 minutes ago. And it's this. Trey Hendrickson, NFL sack leader last year, in search of a new contract for the better part of two off seasons, will not be reporting to training camp today with the rest of the Bengals, he told ESPN. All along, Hendrickson has said he would not play under his current contract. He is dug in and sticking to his word.
As he should be. As he should be and as he should do.
That's the leverage. Yeah, I mean, especially when you get older. And look, he just watched TJ Watt execute this exact plan, which is agitate the team a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, TJ Watt was putting up the deuces on Instagram, and it worked. TJ Watt got a 3-year, $123 million extension from the Steelers that's going to take him to his age 33 season. And TJ Watt's been an outstanding player. He's a future Hall of Famer, just like his brother.
Yeah.
I don't know how well $40 million a year, $41 million a year is going to age with TJ Watt, but the Steelers realize the business that they're in.
Yeah.
And they want their guy in camp, and he's their best player, and he's their most popular. I don't think Hendrickson's not the most popular player in Cincinnati. I'm sure he's popular. They have Joe Burrow on that team. I went to a Steeler game this year in Pittsburgh. Half the jerseys are TJ Watt at those games.
Yeah.
And that includes all the guys like Terry Bradshaw and Ben Roethlisberger that aren't on the team anymore. So they had to get something done. So Trey Hendrickson is sitting here. He led the league in sacks last year. He's watching Max Crosby get paid. He's watching Myles Garrett get paid. He's watching TJ Watt get paid. He wants to get paid too. And Cincinnati has that going on and another stupid contract dispute that we'll get to in just a minute.
Hell, Danielle Hunter's been paid twice since Hendrickson. And I know we're talking about a kind of a different type of thing here, but same position. Mostly guaranteed money, all but $1 million of his first contract, and then they extend him again this offseason. He's looking around, reading the tea leaves. Everybody else is getting paid but him.
Well, and the first one for Danielle Hunter, the first contract was $24 million a year over 2 years.
Yeah.
The year they tacked on was $36 million
in
that neighborhood. Like, so that's the neighborhood all these guys are starting to live in right now.
Yeah.
It's the neighborhood Will Anderson's going to live in next year probably.
And I'm not necessarily trying to pit Hendrickson against TJ Watt per se, and you I think articulated it pretty well how different TJ Watt is viewed in the Steelers ecosystem versus Hendrickson. But I'd venture to say this, and again, this is not a slight to TJ Watt. Hendrickson, at least over the last couple of years, every bit the player.
Oh yeah.
Like I'm not even trying to pit them against each other, but if we're talking about caliber of guy, he belongs. I think Myles Garrett is kind of just a touch above everybody.
Yeah.
But everybody that's below that, the TJ Watts of the world, the Crosbys of the world, Danielle Hunter, for example. Hendrickson's right there with all of those guys.
Oh, this is a good segue. Let me throw another name in there for you.
How's
Micah Parsons sound? All right, so we came into this segment saying, be glad that you have a team where the owner hires a GM and lets the GM do his job, where the owner is not the GM himself. Jerry Jones, general manager and owner of the Cowboys, did his training camp kickoff press conference yesterday. And take this how you will. He's being asked about the Micah Parsons contract negotiations. And I don't know. I never know with Jerry nowadays. He's in his 80s. If he meant for this to be shade.
Or if he's senile.
Or if he's just unfiltered. Yeah. But this is what he had to say about Micah Parsons getting paid eventually, maybe.
Just because we sign him doesn't mean we're going to have him. He was hurt 6 games last year. Seriously. We've signed, I remember signing a player for the highest paid at the position in the league, and he got knocked out 2/3 of the year, Dak Prescott. So there's a lot of things you can think about when you, just as the player does, when you're thinking about committing and guaranteeing money.
Okay, so he's basically saying, hey, you know, I mean, the players got their issues with what they're going to get paid. We got our issues with paying the guy. What if he misses games? You know, we still got to pay him if he misses games. J.J. Watt heard this.
This is like a new concept? Or?
Right. So guys just started getting hurt in the NFL in the last...
Is Jerry new?
2 years. J.J. Watt retweeted that quote yesterday and said this. Anytime you can publicly take a dig at your star quarterback and your star pass rusher simultaneously right before the season begins, you just got to take it.
Just got to.
Nothing makes guys want to fight for you more than hearing how upset you are that they got hurt while fighting for you. It's excellent shade at Jerry Jones. J.J. has been, of all the things that J.J. is outspoken about, player contract situations is a number one.
Yeah.
When guys get paid early, like, and I know J.J. likes the way the Texans go about things. Nick Caserio's erred to the side of paying guys early and paying guys market value. And it pays off because when you do that, you know, the Nico Collins deal wasn't top of the market, but it was a good deal at the time. It's a great deal for the Texans right now. Stingley just got surpassed by Sauce Gardner. You know, Nick paid him early in the offseason. The story from the J.J. Watt tweet is not the tweet itself. It's that Micah Parsons retweeted it right after J.J. posted it.
Yeah.
He agreed. I take that as an acknowledgement and an agreement with everything that J.J. Watt just said.
100%. And everything that J.J. Watt says is correct. Like, this is one of those things. Everybody, I feel like, goes through this at some point where you've got an older person in your life that you love or whatever the case may be, but you don't want them to talk too much in public because they've reached a point in their life to where they'll say anything. Like literally anything, and like maybe you let them talk for a little while, but the longer they talk, the more you're trying to wrap it up.
Yeah.
I feel like that's got to be the case with Jerry Jones, whether it's Stephen Jones or just somebody, whoever cares about Jerry Jones in his life has to like worry every time he talks for longer than say 8 seconds.
Yes. Well, and that should be pointed out too, that cut was actually not in response to a direct question to Jerry. It was off of a question that Schottenheimer had about something. It was because the clip on the internet, the first 2 seconds is Schottenheimer finishing up his answer, and then Jerry jumps in with that.
Because he can't help himself.
He jumps in with that. Here's another one from Jerry Jones. This one is all over the place. You just be warned. He's all over the place on this one. I think he's explaining why he is so cautious on these contract extensions for big players.
The other thing I would say is contracts are 4 or 5 years, okay? There's a lot of water under the bridge if you step out there and do something in the first 2 or 3. You can get hit by a car, seriously. And so there's a lot to look at over a lot of years that could make a big difference.
Like getting hit by a car.
Have you ever heard of any clubs committing to players and then they didn't pan out after they committed to them? We have.
Yeah, okay, so Jerry was on a heater yesterday. We don't have the clip, but I saw it on Twitter where one of the reporters, okay, so he's basically just saying right there, like, have you ever, you know, we've given out bad contracts before. That's what he's saying at the end right there.
Yeah.
There was a reporter that asked about, hey, it was Trayvon Diggs and one other player that they mentioned that, hey, you gave them deals early. You know, like after 3 years, you know, all the things he didn't do with CeeDee Lamb and Dak and Micah Parsons. And Jerry's initial response to that was, should we have? About Trayvon Diggs? Because they're a little sideways with Trayvon Diggs right now.
Yeah.
And you know, just how seriously or not seriously he's taking football.
Right.
I mean, Jerry just openly saying, like, that might have been a mistake to give. It was Trayvon. I don't remember who the other player was. But basically, not even implying. Like, you could tell by his tone and his body language that, and because he followed it up with, well, you brought up their names, not me, you know, to the reporter.
Yeah.
Jerry was on one yesterday. That's a mess right now. That is a mess. The only thing keeping the Cowboys propped up right now is the drafting of quality players.
Yeah.
I think that's Will McClay's department. I don't think that's Jerry's department. I don't know what Jerry's department is these days.
Well, it's unfortunately, and that's the issue. He owns the damn team.
Yeah.
So all of it, you know, the parts that are good that are not reflective of him are still somewhat reflective of him. But then all the other stuff, obviously the toxic environment, if you will, is, you know, a great deal of his doing.
Yeah.
But man, like at the risk of feeling bad for Cowboys fans, I do not know how they get excited for the season. When the owner, the person that puts together the team, more or less, is sounding like that and talking like that ahead of training camp, ahead of the start of the season, at a time when, honestly, they're talented enough to at least be interesting, and they're interesting for all the wrong reasons. Not for being talented, but for having, I won't say a head case at owner. They just got an old, stubborn guy at owner and can't seem to get out of their own way.
That's the most helpless feeling as a sports fan. The most helpless feeling as a sports fan is when you've got bad ownership. Because that, there's no, short of them selling the team, there's no decision that can get, or having some sort of epiphany or evolving. You know, like there are, I think there's owners that are not good owners because they're not experienced yet. And then once they get some experience, you know, then they become good owners. You know, here in Houston, Cal McNair, I thought even when the team was bad in 2021 and 2022, and when they were making, quite honestly, bad decisions, like in hiring decisions and things like that, at head coach, you know, GM, I think, was a good hiring decision by Cal with Nick. He's done a good job. But I thought even when the team was bad, I said this at the time, and I got panned for it, I know, by listeners, when they're 3-14 or whatever, I said, Cal McNair has the makings of a good owner. Because all you're asking your owner to do, the good owners, is do two things. Hire the right people and spend money. And they've never been shy about spending money. He just wasn't hiring the right people. He finally did. He hired Nick Caserio. He hired D'Amico Ryans. And then he let them go do their job to hire the players. You know, Jerry Jones can hire a good coach. He's still the guy that's pushing the buttons from a personnel standpoint, by and large. Or the buck stops with him. We know that. That's the most helpless feeling. When there's bad ownership, and when you know that it's bad ownership that you know has been bad for a while and is not going to evolve out of being bad.
Yeah, well, and the clear difference between the two NFL cities here in Texas is that, you know, Cal McNair was a neophyte. He was basically a baby owner.
Yeah,
you know, he evolved. He was just learning, so it kind of had some understanding of why he was where he was in the and like you said, he evolved to his credit. I would put it a different way as it pertains to Jerry Jones, and the thing that would be frustrating is when you have an owner who either doesn't know what he doesn't know or won't admit to it. Does know what he doesn't know, which I think is the case with Jerry. Probably has a better understanding for his blind spots and his weaknesses than we can see than what's obvious to the naked eye, and is just too damn stubborn to admit it, or whatever it's pride or ego or whatever it is that's getting in the way of him just acknowledging, hey, you know what, I need to step aside, or just being an attention addict and can't step aside, can't even let his head coach answer a damn question without him chiming in.
The real detrimental part, we'll get to Mike Brown here in a second because he's the other owner we're talking about, and this is the local angle to this, is if you Aggies out there are interested in it, is it involves Shamar Stewart. We've talked about this situation, but the last thing on Jerry is, you know, the thing for the Cowboys, I'd be very curious about, you know, I don't follow him day to day. We're not up there, but I do know this. There was way less interest, it looked like, at training camp last year for the Cowboys than in previous years when they go out to California for training camp. They were not, the stands were not full. And I think that's the big question overall. Like, the big picture question for the Cowboys is, the soap opera wasn't a turnoff for people before. Like, it may have been a turnoff in that it was frustrating, but it didn't literally turn people away. They're blending into the pack now, you know, just within the league. They're still big business. They're still going to get their 7 primetime games or whatever they get. You know, they still draw eyeballs. But how much damage have they done to the people that actually care about the Cowboys winning football games?
Yeah, well, think about the NFC. Think about their NFC counterparts that have, and for how long that the Cowboys have been this talented, or at least had this core of talent that they've had over the last, let's just call it 5+ years or so. You know, you look around, even within the division, the Eagles winning the Super Bowl and how well oiled of a machine that is. The Washington Commanders emerging as a legitimate title contender.
With a new owner.
With a new owner.
With
That's a good
new
point.
Owner.
It's a good point. I didn't even think about that. Yeah. With a new owner. The Washington Commanders I mentioned, the damn Detroit Lions, like, emerging from the grave that they had been in for pretty much my entire life and longer than that, you know. And then here is, speaking of my entire life, Jerry Jones has literally owned the Cowboys since I was either born or was a baby.
Yeah.
And it feels like they've only just gone backwards.
Yeah.
You know, even when they're talented as they are, they can't get out of their
Jimmy
own way.
Jimmy Johnson's not in the building. There's not a lot popping with the Cowboys over the last few decades.
Yeah. No, 100%. Yeah. It's got to be frustrating for them.
All right, here's the other owner we're talking about. Again, this is the lesson. The moral of the story for this segment is be glad that you root for a team here in Houston where the owner is not the GM. Has ceded that those duties to an actual good general manager, who we will hear from, by the way, tomorrow at 8:30. Nick Caserio doing a press conference to kick off training camp tomorrow.
An owner, too, by the way, and this is to Cal McNair's credit, an owner, as I was mentioning before, who knows what he doesn't know.
Yeah.
Okay? And, and allows the people, the good people that he hires, to do their job.
Yep. Here's Mike Brown. The Brown family has owned the Bengals for a long, long time. He acts as the GM, essentially, for that team. He is an older man, like Jerry Jones, and he has dug in on a clause in Shamar Stewart's contract, first-round pick out of Texas A&M. He does not want to guarantee he wants to be able to rescind guarantees if Shamar Stewart gets into trouble off the field. He's not done this with any of the previous first-round picks. He's picking this year to dig in. Aggies weigh in. Is this a player that he should be doing this with? I have no idea. Like, that's, to me, and we're going to hear from him here, I promise. To me, when I hear this, I'm like, okay, well, I could see doing this if this were like Pac-Man Jones coming in here, you know, or somebody that was, you knew had a reputation coming into the league. Would have been a really good thing to do with Aaron Hernandez, I would say. does Shamar Stewart have any sort of reputation? Here's Mike Brown explaining why he has dug in on the Shamar Stewart situation.
Well, if we get a player who gets involved in something like that or does something that is just unacceptable, guess what? I don't want to pay him. I really don't. If he's sitting in jail, I don't think I ought to be paying him. And so we say that if he got involved in conduct detrimental, we'd have the right to terminate the guaranteed part for the back years. Oddly, something like this has never occurred in my memory with us. I don't think it's going to occur. So we're sitting here arguing over something that I think is pretty remote. And I ask myself sometimes why the hell we're doing it, but we are. And he's doing it too. And at some point, we got to put this stuff behind and just get him signed and get him up here and get him so he can be a contributor. He needs to get underway soon. It doesn't help him or us to have this strung out.
I listen to guys like this. I'm like, this guy runs a billion-dollar enterprise, a multi-billion-dollar. You know, these NFL teams are worth,
yeah,
you know, at the very least, $6 million. That's what the Commanders went for. They were the last one to sell.
$6 billion.
Did I say million?
Yeah.
Billion.
Right.
Yeah,
just
sorry.
Just want to be clear.
Yeah, no, he wipes his butt with $6 million.
Exactly.
$6 billion.
If it was $6 million, Shamar Stewart would have been paid already.
$6 million. You and I, I'd go find some rich friends and we'd go try to do this thing. $6 billion. $6 billion enterprise.
Even the Bengals.
And this guy is here going, it's probably not going to happen. It's never happened with our franchise, which I find a little curious. The Bengals had major issues at one time with off-the-field guys,
yeah,
right?
Yeah, they had Pac-Man Jones.
That's neither here nor there. Yeah. Let's pretend he's being factual there. Then why are you so dug in on it? This is an important investment for your team. This is your first-round pick.
Yeah.
On defense, by the way, the side of the ball where you sucked last year.
Yeah.
You need this guy in camp. You're arguing with yourself. It probably won't even happen. This has never happened before.
Okay,
I ask myself, why are we so dug in on this? And I'm like, yeah, everybody's asking why you're... No other team is doing this with their first-round pick. And you weren't doing it with your first-round picks. And you didn't do it with Jamar Chase or any of these extensions that you signed recently either have that clause in there that you're looking to have. I got it. Like, Aggie's text in, and I got... Now the texts are flying in. Is there a reason why Shamar Stewart is the one being made an example of here?
Yeah, I mean, I've heard some stuff about Shamar Stewart in terms of like maybe personality or attitude or whatever, and that's just like rumors. But jail? I mean,
he's talking about guys that are criminals.
That's what I'm saying. Like,
yeah.
I don't have anything like that.
Yeah,
I don't have. And does Mike Brown not know that what just happened in 2024 for the Bengals was essentially them wasting a Joe Burrow year.
Right.
Not
an MVP Joe Burrow.
That's what I'm saying. Yeah. Not a year of Joe Burrow's career simply being wasted. Because, you know, he was injured his rookie year. Injuries happen. Sometimes you have a lost year. No. Joe Burrow played at an MVP caliber, was excellent. We talked about it earlier. Them scoring 30 points in at least five games that they lost. Like, Joe Burrow was Joe Burrow, and the reason why you couldn't hang was because your defense could not stop anyone to save its life. You addressed that in the draft, rightfully so, and we're dug in on jail? What are we doing, dude? Like, you've got Joe Burrow, who has famously said, the window is as long as I'm here.
Yeah.
He ain't going to be there forever.
No.
So, like, what are we doing?
Yeah.
What are we doing? And how many times are the Bengals going to catch lightning in a bottle like that and have the opportunity to have a Joe Burrow? They've been bad for pretty much my whole life. So what are we doing?
I want this one to drag on. I hate it for Shamar Stewart, but I want it to drag on to where he goes back into the draft next year. Just because we haven't seen that. You know, the only time we ever see a guy go back into the draft, that I can remember guys going back into the draft, is like when Tampa drafted Bo Jackson back in the day with the first overall pick, and he's like, well, I'm going to go play baseball.
Yeah.
And he goes back in the draft and the Raiders draft, and he's like, all right, I'll play for the Raiders.
Yeah. But even that is a specific situation where the guy plays baseball.
Shamar Stewart ain't going to Sugar Land to go play for the Space Cowboys or something. No.
He ain't. No.
Nope. Yeah, so Pac-Man Jones, Tank Johnson, Chris Henry, did his memory repress the trauma, or is it senility? Yeah.
Bengals
had issues, man.
Yes is the answer. Probably both. Probably a little bit of both.
By the way, Shamar Stewart has been working out at Texas A&M, which got misconstrued into he's been practicing with the A&M football team. Like, people construed it as him, like, actually out there, like, doing tackling drills and, like, in pads and things like that. And I'm like, how stupid are you people?
Have y'all never seen a dude work out at his college
at his
after
alma
he
mater? It happens all the time.
Yeah.
Mike Elko this might have been at SEC Media Days. Mike Elko did a press conference.
I believe it was.
Was it at Media Days? Where he clarified the Shamar Stewart being on campus thing.
There's conflicting reports on whether Shamar Stewart has been working out in College Station or not. I'm just wondering if you've seen him.
Yeah, so good to address that. Shamar Stewart's back with us, working out, getting ready to go to Cincinnati to play in the NFL. It's amazing maybe what can get created on social media these days, but there's no intentions of Shamar to play for the Aggies this year. But Shamar has been around. I think he's very comfortable in our program, really likes the things we do training-wise, and so he's been training, getting ready for his season this year with the Bengals, and we wish him the best.
Okay, thank you, Coach Elko. Appreciate that.
Yeah.
Now we don't need any more Mike Florio think pieces on, well, if Shamar Stewart did want to challenge the system and go back and play football at A&M, or because of the portal, anywhere.
I got to say, though, Mike Florio's kind of being very specific, him aside, I am intrigued by the idea. Like,
back and playing, being able to pull your name out and say, I'm going to go back and play and see who drafts me next year.
Obviously, it's not going to happen here with Shamar Stewart. At least we don't think so. But I do feel like there's a good chance that we could see this in our lifetime. Like, before we meet our maker, that could actually happen, and I'm intrigued by it.
It happens in baseball. I mean, we see, you know, baseball, they've, you know, Mark Appel gets drafted. That's the one I'm thinking of because it's an Astro-related one, but Appel's at Stanford, gets drafted by the Pirates, I think, the year they drafted Correa, the year the Astros drafted Correa. Correa, yep. And then he says, no, I'm going to go back to school. He goes back to school, comes out in the draft. He's the first overall pick the next year.
Don't see it in football. I haven't seen it.
I would hate this for football just because it would take some starch out of the NFL draft.
It would.
And look, it's one of the most unfair ways to get to have the next phase of your life decided, to be chosen to go. Now, it's an honor to be chosen in the NFL. It's a privilege to play football. I get all that. But on the surface of just getting your first job out of college, none of us are in a situation. No, I won't say none. I mean, you know,
most of us
choose to go into the military and all those other, you know, like there are a lot of things that get dictated. But yeah, most human beings have way more control over where they go work after college than in the NFL. Now, most human beings also aren't getting contracts that are millions of dollars when they're 22 years old. So there's a give and a take with all of this. For me personally, as somebody who's, I'm a fan, I'm a consumer of the draft, and I am a radio host.
Right.
I'm in charge of content, co in charge of content for a show here along with Seth C. Payne. I think if these guys could go back to school, that night of the draft has some oomph taken out of it. You know, it's a little flimsier, for lack of a better word.
But really only a little bit, because they still get drafted. So you still get the night, you still get the content on the front end, and then it's not until the back end of it, until after you've already kind of, lack of a better term, spilled your content wide a little bit. Like, you've got the content there,
yeah,
and then you just kind of put the toothpaste back in the
tube. Okay, I get. No, let me.
You see what I mean?
Yes, I do. I get what you're saying. Yeah, we get the moment.
You get the moment. Even if it's not real,
I think,
it's real in the moment.
I think if I were a fan of a bad team, which fortunately I'm not anymore.
Right.
Like when Derek Stingley Jr. got drafted in 2022, now all of a sudden we're celebrating, but now like, all right, is he gonna go back to LSU? Especially with NIL, you know, guys can go back now and at least make a few million bucks.
But it's really only an issue, not just if you're a fan of a bad team, but if you're a fan of a bad team with a bad owner. Because,
because
what would be the reason why he would go back if he's your first-round pick? He ain't going back unless there's some goofy contract situation like this one with Shamar Stewart and the Bengals, we don't suspect would happen with a Cal McNair-led regime.
Right. No, I guess in talking it through, look, I feel like the Texans are a team that anybody that gets drafted would want to come play for and not go back to school because it's a good team with a good quarterback and a head coach that everybody likes. So maybe if they enacted that, now, like you said, if they ever do that, it's years and years away. I don't think it's going to happen in my lifetime. But stranger things have happened.
Sure.
I wouldn't have thought NIL would have happened in my lifetime, maybe. You know,
yeah,
and that happened
enough.
And that flipped in 2 seconds and became a huge thing. So maybe if you're a good team that's well run, with a good coach that everybody likes, this is a wrinkle. This is something on the margins that gets you that little extra percentage chance of winning.
Sean, you and I root for the team. We're wearing the paraphernalia now. We root for the team that was first to fully guarantee the contract of its second round pick.
Right. People love the Texans.
And started a domino effect.
That's true.
So they're more so ahead of the curve when it comes to this thing. I don't think this is something that we would have to worry about. This is something that we would get to, you know, eat popcorn and watch and create content from the outside looking in on.
Text message, knew this would be coming in. They do get the same opportunity. They can go to the NFL or not go to the NFL.
Great talk.
If I decide to go to work at ExxonMobil after college, it'll be ExxonMobil that decides if I'm working in Houston or West Africa. Yeah, I guess to some degree. I never worked in a job where I didn't have total control over where I was geographically, so I can't relate to that, and I don't know all the industries that have similar dynamics to the NFL. I just know that there would probably, if there probably would have been several situations, especially with NIL now, where guys would have, if they had the opportunity to, might have chosen to go back to school and maybe not even play football, just work out for a whole year like it's a COVID year or something like that, not take any damage to the odometer. You know?
Yeah, this is a fine example or a counterpoint, but you're going to have a hard time convincing me that it's on the face of it, that it's fair that the employee dictate or the company dictate where you go.
Yeah.
You know, like, and especially when the draft picks, like, they're the labor, they're the talent, they're the reason why we're here. Like, you're going to have a hard time selling me on that, even if you can pull out your own situation where you had to.
Would you rather have no draft and have it just be the wild, wild west guys coming out of college?
No, as a consumer and as a fan, I'm right there with you. It's fun. I get it. But I'm not going to pretend like it's fair.
Seth,
like,
advocated for the wild, wild west last
year. Yeah, so selfishly, I don't want the wild, wild west because I like the draft.
I do too.
But I think the wild, wild west would actually be fairer and more correct.
It would be super interesting.
And proper. And it would be fun. It would also be fun.
I mean, either way, it would be interesting. Any story involving roster construction and acquisition of players is interesting to fans, regardless of how it's done. You may have a preference as to how it's done, but it will be interesting either way.
I think we, even more so than just a preference, we're conditioned, right? Like, the draft has been around all of us at this point, for all of our lifetimes. It's all we know. It's the only way we know how you enter a league for the most part. You're either drafted or you're signed undrafted, but the draft is the entry point.
Well, here's the thing. If it's up to the NFLPA to decide or to try to make the league come around on not having a draft or becoming more flexible on allowing guys to go back to school, this does not feel like an NFLPA that is equipped to execute that plan right about now.
It does not feel like an NFLPA that is equipped to do anything.
They don't know how to choose leadership that stays out of strip clubs and submits expense
reports.
That's
what I was going to say.
It leaves
the damn paper trail behind.
Yeah, well, and essentially charging the players.
That's what I'm saying.
If you don't know what we're talking about here, the story's a couple days old. It broke over the weekend, and we didn't get to it yesterday. Lloyd Howell, the now former head of the NFLPA, he's got a strip club and expense report thing going on.
Yeah.
That predates his tenure as head of the NFLPA.
That's what he does.
He expensed two strip club visits to his NFL Players Association expense account within the last year. One in Miami in 2024, November 2024, and then earlier this year in Atlanta. Now, I will give him credit. I'm not a huge strip club guy, but from what I've heard through the grapevine, and that's not that I've never been to a strip club.
Right.
I've never been to a strip club in Miami nor Atlanta, but I hear that for those who are enthusiasts of that genre of entertainment, those are like top five strip club towns.
Top five and not five. Right. Yeah, you got Magic City in Atlanta.
Yeah.
And I'm trying to remember one that shut down about 5 years ago in Miami. Damn it, the name of it is escaping me. But it's like,
I'm sure it was backfilled with something.
Oh, man.
Tootsies?
It's not. Tootsies is still there.
Tootsies is where he went, I think.
Yeah. I think Tootsies is still there. King of Diamonds or something. Yeah, okay. It might be King of Diamonds.
Okay.
But either way, like they are.
Good taste.
They are. And in Houston.
Houston's up there. Yeah.
Houston, Miami, and Atlanta, some of the best strip club cities that you'll find in America.
This guy, Lloyd Howell, took a $700 car service in Miami and then went straight to the strip club and spent hundreds and hundreds of dollars. In Atlanta, he ran up $2,400 in strip club expenses, including several trips to the ATM.
Yeah.
Man, you know, look, I'm not here to judge anybody. I'm not a big strip club guy. I'm definitely not a big spend thousands of dollars in strip club guy. If you're the guy that keeps going back to the ATM in the strip club, that's just a sad existence,
It's a sad existence.
Walk in with the $2,000 in your pocket. Yeah. You're a labor leader, man. Come on.
Did you not know where you were going and what goes down there?
How do those $13 ATM charges taste, bro?
Yikes.
Oh, my God. I don't know if that's what they are, I'm assuming.
I mean, why not?
Yeah.
I mean,
captive audience.
Like, if you're that
desperate.
You need
cash. Yeah.
No, it didn't make sense to up the charge if the ATM is right there in the strip club.
Best part of the story. Did you see how he expensed these trips to the strip club? So it's not just that he had the audacity to like take some of the money like from the NFLPA. He said like, no, I'm getting reimbursed for all this stuff here.
Yeah, this is work.
Yeah. Did you see how he couched it on the expense report? You need a reason for a business expense like this.
Yes.
You know, if you go out to lunch with somebody, it's a business lunch. You got to tell them why. You got to put why you were there.
Some kind of blurb or description.
Player engagement events to support and grow our union. This feels like union is a euphemism for something else.
It does, doesn't it?
What are you doing? I'm at the strip club. What are you doing? Growing my union.
Growing my union.
Yeah, man. We're going to use that from now on. That's going to be our
union enhancement.
Our metaphor. Yeah, exactly. Exactly. Hey, grow your union with Blue Chew. Howell is a recidivist, by the way.
Yeah.
Rich Lord word. Shout out to Rich Lord. He was at a company called Booz Allen Hamilton, which I don't know. That's the word booze in it. It's a name. Booz is a name, B-O-O-Z.
And while you're at it, if you're at home, feel free to look up Booz Allen.
Yeah.
Because they've got their own goofy story.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Howell and a colleague racked up quote thousands of dollars at a Manhattan strip club back in 2015 and submitted expense reports for it.
What union were they growing that night?
I don't know which union they were growing. I'm not sure. He's been growing unions for decades now.
He's a union grower, Sean.
Is strip club splurging the dumbest splurging? Like, what's the dumbest splurges out there where you spend literally, like this guy's spending thousands of dollars for something that is like truly an in the moment and whatever your definition is of service at the strip club. We know that depending on how seedy a place is, it can be any number of things. But this we know, it's over after that. Like you're not walking out with a souvenir or anything like that.
Yeah, it's got to be up there.
I hope.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully it's one you can get rid of.
If
you do. But yeah, no, I mean, it's got to be. I too, and this might surprise some people, have never been a strip club guy because it feels fake. Mm-hmm. Like, you know, I'm paying a girl to pretend like she likes me.
It's,
you know,
expensive.
It's expensive.
Yes, that's what it is. Let's call it what it is.
And I've always, like, you know, the stuff that's happening there, if I can get any of this thrill for free,
yeah,
I'm going to try that.
Oh, you're a look over the shoulder guy.
Well, no. I'm a use my charm and conversation to entertain a woman enough to want to do whatever these things are in private with me.
Ben, okay, good. Okay,
you know what I mean?
I didn't know, because you get those guys sometimes. Ben had a look on his face when I said, look over the shoulder guy. You get those guys sometimes if you're sitting in the front row, next to the dance floor there,
right,
and you're the one putting the ones up there. You get the guys that are standing like 3 feet behind you, like getting the free show. It's like the people at Wrigley for years that were able to watch the Cub games
right
by sitting on the roof of their building. They didn't have to pay anything,
yeah,
and they're just leering over while everybody else is paying, you know, $100 a ticket.
Yeah.
Same exact thing. It's the same exact thing. Yeah.
Would you believe me if I told you I marvel more at the women's athleticism at the strip club?
And some
of the physical feats that they, like, if I were to go, that would be the thing I'd be looking at more. So, because you can look at, I don't know if the kids are, but you can look at ass anywhere, right? You can pull it up on your phone, Instagram, whatever
nowadays,
it is.
Yeah.
But those women are talented.
Yeah.
They're athletes,
yep.
You know, but
they,
you know.
Okay. I don't know. Why do I feel like B. Scott's going to start a combine for these women?
You know, everybody's got a dream.
Okay. Now people are going to start texting in the drills. We got to be careful. All right. Payne and Pendergast with you. B. Scott in for Seth Payne. The moral of the story, kids, be glad that we have a football team with an owner who's not the GM, and strip clubs can get very, very pricey. It can get out of control at times. Don't go to the ATM at a strip club.
Yeah, don't.
Show up with cash.
Don't try to grow the union in this way.
Thank you. All right, up next, speaking of spending inordinate amounts of money, this is the most desperate I've ever seen a school to try to get the hell out of their conference. This story is wild. We will have that for you coming up next.